highlight entities like CSIR and HSRC. We thought that it was useful to conduct it as such in view of the time constraints. Otherwise, normally we usually call them separately and individually, but because of the time constraint due to elections and other things, we have sought to try and hit two birds with one stone. So we will therefore expect that the department gives more highlights also to these entities on their strike plans. And thereafter, we will have the opportunity also members of the committee will have to remain after that presentation and interaction so that we attend to our local issues, which is in this case our minutes and the committee program as amended. Members will recall that when we had our program for this term, we were still not orientated about the election date as well as the budget vote. Now, some of those things have coincided with our previously adopted program, and as a result, we've had to amend and change it. So we thought that it was therefore useful in this meeting that we adopt the new amended program when the DG finishes to present the abstract. Without wasting time, I think we must introduce one another because it looks like there are many new faces here. I will start with the members of the committee first, starting from this desk. Those who have never met with me, I am the chairperson of this committee. I'm Ngaba Ngcobo from the African National Congress. I am here with my secretary of the committee, with whom you can liaise if there are any issues that you need from my office or issues that relate to the committee. She is the committee secretary, Shanaz Isaacs. And I also have the secretary, our new secretary of the study group. Remind myself of your name. Kreni Ramakwit. Okay. She is just about a week old, so so that's why. It's not that we don't care about her, we care. So that she's got a very difficult name for me. Yeah. Okay, so we have ourselves here. Then I'll give it to the members to introduce themselves, and thereafter the DG will introduce his delegation here. Thank you. I'll start here.
Thank you, Chair, DG, and your team. Don't worry about the name. She's granny, but she's one of the youngest granny that has ever been. I'm Lindelwa Dunjwa. I'm the Whip of Science and Technology, residing in the Eastern Cape, town called Port Elizabeth. I'm a member of the African National Congress. Thank you.
Good morning. I am Vincenta.
Sana Plaiki, member of the Portfolio Committee Science and Technology.
Myself, yeah, I think you are talking very far from the micro.
Oh, I'm Sana Plaiki, member of the Portfolio Committee Science and Technology. Thanks.
Good morning, I'm Marion Shin from the Democratic Alliance.
Chair, Honorable Members, good morning. I am Kosi Mwelo Nkonya, deployee of the African National Congress from the
you, DG.
Thank you very much. It's a big delegation, chair and the members, so I don't think I'll remember all the names. I can't even see all of them. So with your permission, I'd like them to introduce themselves. So, but before we do that, we'd like to send an apology to the minister who would have wanted to join this gathering, but she's got other commitments, so she's not going to join us, and the deputy minister. So I guess I'm going to be the one leading the delegation. Phil Njoak, I'm the director general in the Department of Science and Technology.
Thanks, DG. I'm Imran Patel, acting deputy DG on for Program 5, which is socioeconomic partnerships.
Are you also on climate change? Why are you not mentioning that? Because COP17 is here, you don't want to be responsible. Okay, carry on. All right.
Yes, sorry. I'm Thomas Ochterheide. I'm DDG for International Cooperation and Resources, and grateful to be here again. Thank you.
Let's see the order. How is the order? It's going that way. How is it? How are we going to know that everybody introducing was up? It's jumping. Look, it has left this man here, behind you. It's going that way. I don't know. It's supposed to be going that way and back that way. Yes.
The chairperson, honorable members, my name is Malapa Kovela. I'm the Deputy Director General for Human Capital and Knowledge Systems.
Hi, good morning, everybody. My name is David Makola. I'm also from the Department of Science and Technology. I'm responsible for policy, planning, governance, monitoring, and evaluation.
To have a DDG or chief director level, a director level, we must explain. Because we want you to be accountable, if at all.
Thanks, Chairperson. I'm a chief director.
Chairperson, my name is Mlungi Sicelo. I'm the director of strategy and planning in the Department of Science and Technology.
Good morning, Chair. I'm Tulane Mavuso. I'm Chief of Staff, Minister Panda.
Good morning, Chair. I'm Martin Mokani, Special Advisor to Minister Panda.
Good morning, Chair. My name is Temba Masilela. I'm the Deputy CEO for Research in the Human Science Research Council.
Good morning. I'm Olive Shosana, and CEO of the Human Sciences Research Council. Thank you.
Good morning, Chairperson, honorable members. My name is Tulane Dlamini. I'm the Group Executive for Research and Development at the CSIR.
Good morning. My name is Pumza Zweni. I am the manager responsible for strategy at the CSIR.
Good morning, Chair and the honorable members. My name is Malokhulwane Malapane. I'm the CFO at the DST. Thanks.
Good morning. My name is Lerato Kumbi. I'm the acting DDG Corporate Services DST.
Good morning. Imran Saluji from the Space Science and Technology Unit at DST, Director for Earth Observations.
I think we are left, unfortunately, the DDG has introduced himself. We are left with you now. Although we know you, some people don't know you yet.
Luyanda France, Parliamentary Liaison Office of Minister of Science and Technology.
I think we didn't catch on the faces there at the back. Can you also introduce yourself so that you know how many people are from the media?
Aziza Fredericks, Parliamentary Liaison, CSIR.
Good morning, Chair and Honourable Members. My name is Nurunisa Mula. I'm the Director and Deputy Minister, Hanekom's Office.
Ms. Havens, DMG.
Pam Saxby from Sabinet. Tari Mawela, Parliamentary Liaison Officer, Deputy Minister, Hanekom's Office.
Thank you very much to all of you who have introduced themselves to us. Without wasting any time, I will therefore give the DG to lead us on the presentation. Thank you very much.
Thank you very, very much. We really are grateful for the opportunity to engage with the Portfolio Committee. We haven't really seen you for a long time, so we are delighted to be here today. So we'll be sharing with you some work that the department has done, but also some of the things in the next 3-4 years that we'd like to continue to do. So the presentation would include the vision and the strategic oriented goal outcomes. This is the terminology we've received, but basically the kinds of things that we'd like to do at the DST. We want to talk about the emerging national system of innovation and its key priorities and some of the outputs of this national system of innovation that we are continuously building. We'll highlight some of the challenges and some priorities and initiatives to address some of those challenges. We would like to give you a sense of what we are doing on the monitoring and evaluation side of things. As you know, this administration is putting a lot of emphasis on ensuring that we have capacity to monitor and evaluate what we do. Some sense of numbers where we are on the investment on the gross expenditure on R&D, some resources which we are grateful and thankful for, and then we'll conclude. So the vision is to create a prosperous society that derives enduring and equitable benefits from science and technology, and in order to do that, the mission is to develop, coordinate, and manage an emerging national system of innovation that will bring about maximum human capital, sustainable economic growth, and improved quality of life. So there are two concepts on the mission. The first one is an emerging national system of innovation. The second point is that that national system of innovation has to help us in growing economy or making contribution to economic growth, improving the quality of life, and we need to do that through the adequate human capital. So we'll just keep emphasizing these 3 points as we go along. So in terms of the strategic outcomes that we would like to achieve, we would like to develop the innovation capacity of this NSI that is under construction and thereby contribute to socio-economic development. So the main thing that we are keeping ourselves busy about is to ensure that we have the capacity to innovate within the emerging NSI. We would like to enhance our knowledge generation capacity in order to produce world-class research outputs and turn some of the advanced findings from this knowledge that we generate into innovation products and processes. And hopefully, again, these will contribute to the socio-economic development that we've talked about in the previous slide. Secondly, we think we need to have appropriate human capital for doing science, for doing technology, and to innovate so that we meet the needs of the society. These are the building blocks or the tools you need. We have to build and train the next generation of researchers and enable technology development and transfer as well as knowledge interchange. We think we can position South Africa as a strategic international research, development, and innovation partner and destination through the exchange of knowledge, capacity, and resource between South Africa, its regional partners, and the partners from the rest of the world, thereby strengthening this NSI that we are building. You've seen this slide before, where in 1996 we started off with a white paper where the idea of the National System of Innovation was introduced. In 2002, we honed in much more detail in terms of the areas of focus, and these include science missions and technology missions, which I assume the committee is now familiar with. In 2004, the Department of Science and Technology was created. Before, it used to be the department which was combined with arts and culture.
a new strategic management model on managing science and technology across the system was introduced by Cabinet at the same time in 2004. And then in 2007, two things happened. The first is we subjected ourselves to the Organization for Economic Cooperation and Development Review, and then we developed the 10-year innovation plan. And we are now busy implementing some of the recommendations of all of these policy documents. And in the next couple of slides, I will then be giving the committee a sense of where we are in implementing these various pieces of work that the department is doing. So let's start off then with this concept of a national system of innovation. It was introduced in the 1996 White Paper on Science and Technology. It can be thought of as a set of functioning institutions, organizations, and policies which interact constructively in the pursuit of a common set of social and economic goals and objectives. So that's really the abstract definition of what an NSI is. We recognize that we do not have a fully fledged national system of innovation. However, we do believe that important building blocks have been put in place, and we therefore need to find a way of enhancing the emerging NSI. And what we will be doing in the next couple of slides is to share with you some of these building blocks that we have put in place and some of the recent outputs that we have derived out of the work that we've done before. So the way in which we'll do this is we'll give you a sense of what we are putting in place in terms of building the appropriate institutions to strengthen and to ensure that we have a fully functional NSI. We will give you examples of work that we are putting in place to coordinate our activities within the institutions that are in the NSI, how we have successfully, or at least in certain instances, been able to bring in the industry into the work that we do, and some successes and some challenges in coordination within government. We will be giving you some highlights on some of the selected theme-based research development and innovation areas which are highlighted in the NRDS and the 10-year innovation plan. And then we'll give you some sense of some progress and some challenges in the research capacity enhancement activities, and then also some human capital development activities. In this area, we'll be sharing some of these outputs together with the institutions that are part of the NSI. And at that stage, I may request maybe Dr. Dlamini from the CSIR to share some work that they have done. We've selected about two or three examples of the work that I think is happening at the there. We have some examples of the work that is happening at the National Research Foundation. Originally, we were told that Dr. Kenson Pillay would be joining us from the NRF. I'm not so sure if we have somebody. Otherwise, I think Dr. Covella would be giving us a sense of the progress that we've been making on the centers of excellence, as well as on some of the post-grad and postdoctoral work. So we'll be able to do that. And, of course, Dr. Olive Shisana is here if there's a need to highlight a bit more on the work that the HSRC is doing.
I guess Dr. Covella will also tell us how far he is in the task that we gave him on indigenous knowledge systems.
He knows that more than anybody. We don't visit that office in the DST because they tell us it's dangerous, but sure, certainly he can. So then, let me start then with the institution building and instruments to facilitate innovation. As you are aware, in this committee, we now believe that we have a technology innovation agency that is in place. The board has been inaugurated, and last year, of course, we had everything put in place to make sure that the TIA is up and running. We are continuously in the process of setting up the National Intellectual Property Management Office. We have a transitional office at the moment, and we've been given the go-ahead to set up the full office. We're just going in consultation with both Treasury and DPSA in the structure for the setting up of NIPMO, but we are well on our way in the implementation of the IPR Act from publicly financed R&D. We will probably highlight some of the details of this work in due course in this committee in terms of the rollout of the offices of technology transfer. I will be sharing with you a number of examples on these centers of competence, which are instruments which we are putting in place to try and coordinate activities from various institutions. I think we've got about four or five examples of emerging successes around ensuring that we work together in pursuit of common goals. We'll give you a sense of research development and innovation to support sector competitiveness and dynamism. We'll give you an example of a post-harvest innovation work that the department is doing with the Department of Agriculture, Forestry and Fisheries. And then, of course, we'll continue to see whether we can strengthen the work that we are doing with our provincial partners. So what do we mean by sector innovation? This is a diagram which shows the work that we are doing under post-harvest innovation. As you know, you find that a lot of farmers have to send their harvest to markets which are quite far away. And we then have initiated this program to support farmers, both small and large. And what is important here is that sometimes in order to keep your produce fresh, you have to ensure that you've got the right packaging. So we've been looking at material biocomposites in order to make sure that the packaging helps ensuring that the products can sustain their freshness over long distances. We are looking at how we can use information technology to look at electronic data flow, carbon calculator, and temperature management as these goods are moved from South Africa to their markets. We're looking at energy and environmental technology, chemical technology, biotechnology, and a range of other support measures in order to ensure that this sector continues to ensure competitiveness. So this is an example of the work that we're doing in a particular sector in order to support, for instance, agriculture. And then I talked about examples of centers of competence and partnerships. Essentially here, what we are trying to do is to say that sometimes in South Africa, there are different capacities that reside in different institutions. And our design and our desire here is to look at whether some of these capacities can be harnessed into a single competence in pursuit of a range of activities. So here I would like to talk about what we are doing in fluorochemicals, where we would like to take advantage of the huge endowment that we have in fluorspar in South Africa, but can we add value so that we can generate exports in this area? Same with titanium metal powder industry development, unmanned aerial systems, nanotechnology in minerals beneficiation and advanced materials, and then the hydrogen program, just to give you latest update on this. And in the brackets, as you can see, it's an example of the institutions that are working together in pursuit of these areas. So with your permission, Chair, we'll go through this in much more detail. This is a schematic description of our attempt to add value to our fluorspar through an initiative which we call Fluorochemical Expansion Initiative, FEI. On the right-hand side, we give you a set and a range of expertise that is required in order to pursue this initiative in the area of fluoropolymers and elastomers, high-temperature technologies, and fluorochemical patterns. And then you can actually see what is the market focus on fluoropolymers and elastomers. What we have done, if you look below that, is we have set up a research chair at the University of Pretoria for knowledge production and knowledge exploitation in order to develop this expertise and to exploit this market. Below on the top right, separation technology, R&D, organic chemistry, and the market focus is refrigerants and performance fluorocarbons, and we also have a research chair at the University of KwaZulu-Natal that is pursuing this area and this market focus. On the top left-hand corner, operational design specifications, business development and market in the fluorochemical, commercial, and logistic area. This is done by Pelchem at Nexa. and then in the fluorochemical and inorganic fluorides, where we want to look at fluorochemical and nuclear technology, again, we have an expertise at Nexus. So this consortium is working together in order to pursue a market share of between 5% and 25% of fluorspar, which is a global market. We hope that if we do get this correct, we will be in a position to create 1,000 direct jobs out of these whole initiatives. But most importantly, we think it will increase our export value to a value of about R1 billion. These are estimates, and we're continuously looking at these estimates and whether we can achieve them. Just to give you an update to date, 103 students have been supported through this initiative at postgraduate level, and there are 133 conference papers that have been published and articles, and we have 7 partners. The second area is the Titanium Center of Competence. Again, this graph just tries to indicate to you the various capacities that are required in order to pursue titanium metal powder industry in South Africa. Again, we don't expect you to read all of this, but what we'd like to highlight is that, again, we have a consortium of a number of institutions in South Africa, including international partners in the form of the National Institute of Material Science in Japan, that are working with us in order to pursue this area. We also have some companies like Boeing and Airbus that are already interested in working with South Africa in this initiative. What have we achieved so far? 61 students have been supported, 51 patents have been filed, and then 56 publications have been produced. We hope to capture about 10% of the global market share in this area. Another area in South Africa where we already have some capacity from a number of institutions is unmanned aerial systems. The aim here is to stimulate research and development and innovation in order to have a high-tech industry development by, as we have said, integrating a number of capacities. It involves a range of players from science councils, research institutions, higher education institutions, industry and government, and then the aim is to capitalize on the emerging civilian as well as commercial unmanned aerial system global markets so that we can contribute to our socio-economic development. There are obvious targeted civilian applications that you can target for these UAS systems, border patrol, disaster management, and critical infrastructure monitoring. I think at the previous slide I did indicate the institutions that are involved, CSIR, Cape Peninsula University of Technology, DENEL, ATE, and other private sector partners. The National Innovation Center at MINTEC has been looking at using precious metal-based systems in order to develop diagnostics, therapeutics, as well as water treatment technologies in the nano area. So at this point in time, the intelligent nanoparticle system at the CSIR has produced a number of home-based diagnostic prototypes for diseases such as TB and malaria. And this work has, at this point, produced 125 journal publications, 93 postgraduate students, and the Nano Innovation Center at the CSIR, which is really looking at nanostructured materials, has produced 43 journal publications, 18 postgraduate students, and 9 postdoctoral fellows. Again, if at a later stage you'd like Dr. Tulani Dlamini to expand on this, we'd be happy to do that. And then the 3 hydrogen centers of competence that we have set up at UWC, UCT and MINTEC, as well as Northwest University and CSIR, continue to make some progress on the 3 areas that we have identified. As you know, we would like to have a hydrogen infrastructure and the production of hydrogen in South Africa, so Northwest and CSIR are doing that. We would like to build on our knowledge and capacity on catalysis, which is based both at UCT and MINTEC, because that's fundamental at the work of fuel cell systems, and then we'd like to develop and construct some small portable fuel cell systems, and UWC is playing a leading role in that area. So our goal here is to capture 25% of global PGM catalyst demand by 2020. We have by now appointed world-class center directors in the 3 COCs, and a new program on
advanced batteries has been established at UWC, and we are now producing some very, very small batteries as part of the work that we are doing on the Energy Green Challenge. We have been able to establish with partners some clean energy investments, and we are happy to report here, for instance, that we are getting co-funding from Impala Platinum at the tune of 4 million rand in support of this initiative. Last year we did report on the partnership that we are receiving from Anglo Platinum around the same area of about 100 million rand. We've been able to also leverage additional co-funding from industry, not only within South Africa, but we are beginning to work with other partners from the world. We have a German company called Formatec that is interested in partnering with us in the local manufacture of membrane electrode assembly using the intellectual property from their self and of course ourselves. Progress to date is that we have one prototype on hydrogen storage technology, we have two patents, and we have six publications, one book chapter, 77 postgraduate students, as an example of some of the work that is coming from these centers of competence. I did talk about the partnerships,
Sorry, DG. I think it would have been better for you, at least at that area, because it's too highly technical, at least to explain it in simple terms, this hydrogen and membranes, well, how they work together. because otherwise you'll be explaining now, we will not be able to discuss, to interact with you afterwards when we have not understood what you are.
Thanks, Chair. I think there are people who are better suited to explain this. But a fuel cell is essentially a device that takes hydrogen and split it so that it produces electricity. Now, in doing that, the reaction of splitting hydrogen is done in a component called membrane electrode assembly. So in other words, if you remember, any battery has to have a positive and a negative electrode, so the electrodes are part of this assembly, and then you put platinum inside in order to enhance the reaction that is required to split hydrogen to produce hydrogen ion and an electron in order to produce electricity. So the heart of any fuel cell is this assembly where you have a platinum and where hydrogen comes and then it's split into the negative and the positive ion that then conducts electricity. So if you have the know-how to produce this membrane electrode assembly, you in a sense have all the knowledge that you need in order to produce fuel cell. Of course, it depends what size of the fuel cell you want to produce. So by having this company working with our center of competence at UWC, we are now in a position to produce small portable fuel cells that could be used, and we are targeting backup systems that are required by a range of communication companies that need uninterruptible power supply for us to be able to use our cell phones all the time. So we are targeting these backup systems using this MEA and the fuel cells that are being developed. We would invite, perhaps at the appropriate time, working with, of course, UWC, the members to see, I think is a wonderful initiative in terms of the progress that this center of competence in particular has made, both in the manufacturing of these small systems, the range of young students that are part of the program, as well as, I think, a system of producing batteries that they are doing as part of our battery technology initiative. So I hope, Chair, that in a simpler way it clarifies what they are.
Very good. Okay.
So we talked about government partnerships as one of those challenges in the national system of innovation that we are constructing, where we have made some progress. We are working with, for instance, the Department of Environmental Affairs on areas relating to climate change, science and innovation. Our contribution in support of the work that they do on climate change is the science of understanding the climate change, as well as extracting some innovation that is brought about by the challenges of climate change. We are working with them on a program to support the Green Economy Initiative that they are leading. We are working with the Department of Agriculture, Forestry and Fisheries, on agricultural research and development plan that will be supporting this particular sector. We've worked with the Department of Health. We've been conducting a technology audit of the National Health Laboratory Services. We work with the Department of Water, Department of Communication on a range of activities. So we really have some successes in terms of working specifically with other government departments. If you ask us whether this is enough, we think there's a lot more that needs to be done, and we'll be exploring this in the next couple of years. On the human capital development, we have some recent outputs, and these are the numbers from 2008, 2009, and 2010 on the honors, masters, doctoral, and postdoctoral support programs through the NRF that we are providing to these students and fellows. We think we have a successful NRF internship program, which we have been working together with the NRF, where we are seeing an increase in terms of the number of interns that are supported. We are continuing with the rollout of the South African Research Chairs Initiative. We now have 92 by 2010. We have now 8 centers of excellence that are already in place. At this point in time, I would like to ask Dr. Kobela if he's ready to talk about some of the numbers in terms of the publication students that are coming out of both the research chairs and the centers of excellence, and then we'll continue later on. Dr. Kobela.
Chair, with your permission, I think it may be easier to compare chairs with the rated researchers, because there you're looking at heads. Can you not hear me? Is that better, Chair? I'm trying to look at you, Chair, while at the same time trying to look at the other members. Chairperson, I was proposing that I want to give you a snapshot of looking at the performance of chairs relative to, say, rated researchers, because there you're comparing apples to apples, because you're comparing heads, individuals. The centers of excellence are an amalgamation of individuals. They come together as a unit. And so it's not an absolute and a direct comparison that would be appropriate. But if you look at the chairs, and one were to look at the data that the Director General has just presented, for the period 2008-09-10, on an average, the chairs supervise 1.27 to 1.4 honor students per chair. Okay, that's gone up from 1.27 honors, 1.3 in 2009, 1.4 in 2010. So it's been steadily going upwards. So it's normalized, and therefore you can track performance. At master's level, we've gone up from 2.26 masters in 2008, 2.99 in 2009, and 3.21 in 2010. Again, it's an upward trend. Doctorates, 2008, 1.69. In 2008, 1.99 in 2009, and 2.58 in 2010. And postdocs, 0.82 in 2008, 1.07 in 9, and 1.1.
Those percentage increases?
No, Chair. Those are the average number of those postgraduate students supervised per chair. Because then that way you can compare. Because as the years go by, the number of chairs obviously increases. So you've got to be able to normalize and be able to compare from year to year whether or not you're going upwards. So that's it's a healthy increase in terms of the supervisory load, if I could put it in those terms.
And if one were to look at those colleagues that are not chairs, but they are their peers and they're rated scientists, they supervise at the honors level 2008.3, 0.4 in 09, and 0.37. So it's relatively flat. Likewise with masters 1.77, 1.53, and 1.47, again relatively flat. And doctorates 0.89, 0.95, 0.98, again. So the point I wanted to make is when you are comparing heads, apples to apples, certainly the chairs are performing extremely well at the supervisory level. At the output level, similarly, the chairs on average are producing 4.23% of the total research publication outputs of this, of South Africa's research outputs. Keeping in mind that we, as the Director General has indicated, in 2010, while we have put 82 chairs there, we had 72 that were actually active and producing research. And there were 5,028 other scientists that were producing. So 78 individuals gave us close to 5% of the productivity of the system. So this is to try and give you a sense of the performance of the system in the HCD category. But let me pause there, DJ.
Thanks very much, Dr. Covella. So on the one hand, these are percentages of students that were supported through existing instruments. What we'd like to highlight in this slide is that if you express the number of students that we are supporting as a percentage of the total possible students that we could be funding, we have just rough numbers indicating that we're only supporting 3% at honors level, 5% at master's level, 12% and 37%. So we think that we are making progress in terms of some of the numbers that Dr. Covella showed. But we are of the opinion that in terms of what we should be supporting and some of the productivity that we required to have the world-class knowledge production, we are still at, if you like, the lowest level. So that's really, we're just posing a question, and we need to say, how do we then make sure that we support more than 3%, more than 5%, more than 12%, and more than 37%. Again, you know the science missions in the areas of astronomy, indigenous knowledge system, biosciences, paleo world, and Antarctic research in the NRDS, the technology missions, and some of the grand challenges. So what I'd like to do now is just maybe to give some successes in some of these areas in terms of the recent outputs and some of the achievements. You are all familiar with the successes that was announced last year on the technophobia microbicide gel, which reduces HIV infection in women by roughly 30%. This is a program that through the former BRICS and now the TIA, we have been supporting, and we are now looking at going into the next phase of funding that is required for phase 2B and phase 3 trials in this area. The minister launched the hydrogen fuel tricycle in August 2010 as an example of developing a very useful transport in rural and semi-rural areas for transporting goods. Again, this is hydrogen fuel tricycle was developed at the University of Western Cape with a new technology on a metal hydride for the storage of hydrogen. We are all aware of the work that we together with partners have been supporting at the University of the Witwatersrand and the partners on the discovery of this fossil last year. And you've also had some success stories in terms of peer-reviewed publications coming out of our South African Research Chairs Initiative. We thought this session would not be complete if we don't give a little bit of an update on the square kilometer array
As you know, the experimental development models were completed in 07-08. The Karua Ray Telescope with seven dishes was completed in 08-09, and the preparation of the CAT-7 infrastructure and construction was also completed in 2010. And this array is already being integrated with the dish in RTPS, hope to be starting to do some measurements. We were able to have approximately 600 public works, expanded public works related jobs in the SKA program. We participated and were informed of the preliminary international Meerkat design review, which was completed in 2011. And as again the members know, that we then called for a number of scientists to submit proposals that they could do in this experiment. And as you know, we already have a number of proposals and researchers who actually would be wanting to do radio astronomy work even before the Meerkat is built. So this, we think, is a good indication that we are moving in the right direction. Recently, there has been an FKA founding board that has been set up. Nine countries have signed up for this board, because this would be the board that would be driving the SKA activities. And then we are, it's meant to set up pre-construction international SKA Inc. By mid-2011. So this funding board has to develop and bed down the designs that are required for the SKA construction in 2016-2017. On the site selection, the formal site selection request for information and final roadmap and weighting and final criteria were approved by the SKA Science and Engineering Committee, SSEC, and it's been sent to both ourselves and Australia. So we know exactly the information that is required in order to assist in the site selection that hopefully will be done in 2012. So we thought we'd give an update on the SKA. This again is some overall performance on the ISI publication from 2006 to 2009. Again, we are saying to the portfolio committee, with the modest and significant funding that we have received, we seem to be going in the right direction in terms of increasing the knowledge production in South Africa. The Council for Scientific and Industrial Research has also been working with us on a number of initiatives that are meant to address some challenges in the society in South Africa. They developed a new design for low-income houses, and we've been working with the Department of Human Settlements in a pilot project in Claymont, not far from here, for the design and the building of 412 houses that are low cost and very well designed. A cell phone-based application was developed to support the delivery of educational information to resource-constrained communities at the Meraga Institute. And then last year, we continued to roll out the Rural Broadband Connectivity Program, the Wireless Mesh Network, which has benefited 150 schools in Kangala District Municipality in Limpopo. The exciting part of this work is that not only have we been able to connect these 150 schools that have now had broadband, but we've also been able to develop 19 youngsters into something which we call village operators. So these are youngsters that are providing, if you like, the support and the maintenance of this broadband infrastructure, and they are developed into entrepreneurs, and they will be running the network, but over time we hope that they will begin to develop a range of services that could be run over this network and begin to generate income and employ others as well. So it's a very successful story. As you know, we've initiated a number of proof-of-concept demonstration activities with the strong science in the medicinal plants area, utilizing land owned by the ARC and research farm in rural-based universities. We are finalizing the incubation of essential oils, SMMEs. We think the DST needs to start looking for partners to take this program over, because the pilot and the scientific understanding, we think, has been demonstrated. We are continuing with the program of establishing abalone hatcheries to benefit from IP that was generated from the Innovation Fund, the University of Stellenbosch and MMU, are heavily involved in this program, and we've been able to sustain 306 job opportunities and additional 300 new jobs. You may say these numbers are small, but remember this is a pilot. The question is, what would happen if we roll this out, and I will talk about what we want to do. On the international arena and the rest of the continent linkages, we've won the bid to host the new regional NIPAD Water Initiative. We've been able to leverage nearly R1 billion through official donor assistance. South Africa was awarded the hosting of the 2015 World Social Science Forum for the first time in Africa. And we would like to also acknowledge the election of our HSRC CEO and president as the president of this International Social Science Council. And again, HSRC is here to speak more about what this means for South Africa. The last output is the work that we are doing in order to support policy and decision making. As you know, we have the Risk and Vulnerability Atlas, which has been developed to support planning and decision making as part of our global change work to assist people at the community level for decision making. We have developed a manual for CSIR for road maintenance and portal repair. We are providing scientific support for the Working for Water program. And with the HSRC and the CSIR, we've developed an integrated planning, development, and modeling project. This is an example of the Risk and Vulnerability Atlas. So it's a decision support tool for decision makers. It really builds on existing databases in order to provide a sense of the impacts of climate change and the areas that would be vulnerable and subjected to risk for disasters, and therefore how to ensure that we are able to know what they are and be able to respond accordingly. So some of our current challenges is to really continuously looking at our R&D investment. As you know, we are still trying to reach a target of 1% of gross expenditure on R&D as a percentage of GDP. We'll show you the numbers where we are. We are still, as we have already indicated, that we need to have a targeted effort in science, engineering, and technology, human capital development activities around those points that we have here. We have to continue to strengthen our innovation capacity. We have to increase our knowledge generation, and we do need to ensure that governance and the coordination of the system is enhanced as we go ahead. So what are our medium-term priorities? So now we've talked about what we've done, so this is forward-looking. We want to continue to develop bioeconomy, nanotechnology program, hydrogen economy, space science, and ICT and advanced manufacturing as the key focus areas that we have chosen from the 10A Innovation Plan and the NRDS. We think we have some successful pilots that we would like to upscale with appropriate partners on a range of technologies, some of which we have shown here, to address poverty and improve the quality of life of South Africans. We need to develop an innovative and diverse flux of young people seeking and finding careers in science and engineering. We think we have some accomplishment of some successes in turning trends in global science into our national advantage, and the work that we're doing in astronomy is an example, and the space science as well. So the initiatives in the medium term is to finalize the human capital development strategy for research, development, and innovation. We have a draft document which we are discussing, and maybe during the course of this year we'll be able to come and share that with the portfolio committee. We would like to strengthen some structural interventions which we have shared, such as the SARCHI, the South African Research Shared Centers of Excellence, postdoctoral programs, and some cutting-edge research and development platforms that we've put in place. And then we want to make sure that we have a pipeline of youngsters that come into the science system. We also want to consolidate the new institutions that we are putting in place, TIA, NIPMO, and the Space Agency, South African National Space Agency. We would like to have a model of ensuring that our cyber infrastructure continues to be developed and maintained. We would like an investment and growth strategy for the provision of the scientific equipment to support research and innovation. Without
the adequate infrastructure and tools, we will not be able to go anywhere. We have made some successful in developing and strengthening our international linkages, so we would like to do this, especially with an emerging strong partnership with some partners in the rest of the continent in support of a range of activities such as human capital, research and development, as well as infrastructure. We would like to establish an enhanced partnership with the private sector to increase the investment in research and development. We think that the strategic management model has got its challenges, and we would like to look at how best we can coordinate and have better governance of the national system of innovation that is under construction. We think we need to enhance the long-term planning, our monitoring and evaluation capacity. Under M&E, as you know, we have now developed the performance information management system. We are working with the public entities, and we perhaps did not highlight in this presentation a program called RIMS, Research Information Management System, which the NRF is rolling out for collecting data so that we can have an information management system that helps us both in the planning as well as in the monitoring and evaluation. Work is underway to develop impact assessment capacity both at the DST but in our public entity so that we can assess the outcomes and the impact of the work that we do. And of course, we'd like to make sure that this process is aligned with the broader presidency M&E work that you are familiar with. So in 2008-09 R&D survey results, as you know, we showed that we were at 0.92% of GDP as expenditure. Unfortunately, in this, I think this is a figure which is 0.01% less than the previous year survey. The private sector spending continues to be approximately 58.6%, and that's why we think it's important for us to continue to sustain the private sector contribution to R&D. Again, this is a graphical representation of this, so I will not talk about it. So this is the split of the funding that in the next 3 years we have. It will increase from a modest 4.4 million to about 5.5, and the split is shown and which programs are growing. Again, we are extremely grateful to this committee for supporting us in making sure we have these resources. This is the classification according to economic classification. As you again know, the bulk of the funding that we receive at the DST is the money that goes out to the public entities that report to the department. This is how it's split amongst the four programs. Administration takes 4%. 29% goes into socio-economic partnership, 45% on human capital, 3% on international, and 19% on research development and innovation activities. So this is the graphic representation of the growth of the funding. The lighter color, I will not say what it is because they will say I'm colorblind, is the amount that was voted, and the darker color is how much we have spent against what we have voted. And you can see that we always try our level best to match our expenditure to what is voted, including this year where we think we've spent approximately 98% of the budget or thereabout. But we'll talk about that when we visit you during the annual report program. This is the structure of the department, which again has not changed. Socio-economic partnership on the extreme right, human capital and knowledge system, international cooperation and resources, research, development and innovation, and then corporate services. Yes, from time to time, it's an old position. We've called it before senior program manager. In a sense, it's the person who's responsible. We call it it's a vacant position. Yeah, it used to be held by Mr. Mwahi, who left to go to, yes, that's what. So the public entities, again, that report to the DST, you are familiar with, but, oops, I don't know what happened, I apologize. Uh, familiar with the public entities, but as you can see, we have two new members in this table, the Technology Innovation Agency and the National Space Agency. So in conclusion then, we have our medium-term outputs, which are driven by the medium-term strategic framework, National Research and Development Strategy, and the 10-year Innovation Plan. From what we have shown you, we think that the performance is satisfactory, but there are challenges going ahead, and we have highlighted some of those. A steady growth in the resources, as we have seen in the graphs. We continue with the various building blocks that we are putting in place for an emerging national system of innovation. We would like to continue our focus on human capital development, research and development, and infrastructure. We continue to work with our public entities to ensure that we are aligned to implementing government priorities, and we want to continue to strengthen our monitoring and evaluation system. So that's the end of the presentation, Chair. At this point, I'm handing over to you. Thank you.
Thank you very much, DG. I thought that you said you'll give some small opportunity for some input from CSIR and HSRC, which is why we included them here, so that we also hear their voices. They may be nice, they may be hoarse. We want to hear their voices.
Thanks, Chair. I didn't want to sound like I'm running this meeting. So maybe Dr. Tulan Dlamini can say a few words and elaborate on some of the things we said about the CSIR, and Dr. Shisana is also here. She can also talk about some of the highlights of the HSRC. Thank you.
Thank you very much, DG. I think you've covered all the important elements, in fact, that sit within our strategic plan. I can maybe add that within the organization, we've been driving a process of trying to focus our research and development in line with the national programs as being driven by the Department of Science and Technology, but also in terms of what is happening at national level. And in the process, we have identified six areas of focus. It's energy, it's health, it's built environment, it's natural environment, defense, and... Thank you, Chair. Maybe I can repeat the last point of trying to just quickly articulate what the main areas of focus are within the CSIR. I'll repeat them. It's energy, health, built environment, natural environment, defense and security, as well as industry. And within industry, we've made a very particular choice of mining as well as advanced manufacturing. The examples that have been given by the DG fall within this portfolio of work that we're trying to execute within the organization. I think maybe I'll just stop here for now, and maybe I'll take any question that might arise from the specific points that the DG has raised around some of the work that we've done. Thank you.
Okay, HSRC.
Thank you, Chairperson and honorable members. The HSRC is involved in the 12 areas of government priorities. In other words, of those 12 outcomes that the government wants to achieve, the HSRC is active in all of them, but active obviously to, you know, different levels. In some cases, a whole lot more, in others, facilitative. In terms of quality of basic education, we are involved in conducting the Trends in Mathematics and Science Survey, which actually helps the country to compare itself with other countries in the region as well as globally to try to understand where our shortcomings are and where we need to improve as a country. In terms of health and life expectancy, we've got a number of research studies that we're doing in this area, starting with the birth to 20, where we started following the children whom we call Mandela's children because they were born around 1994, and we followed around the early 1990s after Mr. Mandela was released, and we followed them through all the way to see what their health status is and what actually needs to be done. We also have a South African population-based HIV behavioral risk survey, which we do every 3 years. We've already done 3 of those, and this year we are going into the field to do the 2011 survey, which includes a critical component
maternal mortality as well as infant mortality. We all know the difficulties with those statistics in the country, with differences of opinions among the scientists as to what the actual value is, and we've decided to add this into the big survey, and with the hope that it will contribute more to focusing ourselves in terms of what is the best way actually to measure maternal mortality and infant mortality in the country. And then in addition to that, we're starting a big program, a big research project with the assistance of the Department of Health. In fact, on both of those, the population-based survey and this particular one on South African National Health and Nutrition Examination Survey, we're working closely with the Department of Health. For the first time, this country will be able to have national-level data on the health status of the population determined by not only perceptual issues but also physical examination and laboratory examination, so that we can be able to target the interventions that will help to increase life expectancy, you know, in South Africa. And then we are also involved, obviously, in what the DG has talked about in terms of our research and development, you know, survey. The Department of Science and Technology funds us to do the project that tracks science spending in South Africa. That's close to 1% that you are seeing there. Much of that work has been delegated to the HSRC by the Department of Science and Technology to do that, and we're appreciative of very much, you know, of that. In terms of skills and capable workforce, we are involved in studies that evaluate the impact of the National Skills Development Strategy, and much of this work has actually been recognized, you know, by government as very valuable. And then I would want to say that we do look at some work in the area of human settlements and improve quality of the household life. And we do that through the Social Attitude Survey, which is an annual survey that we do to track the opinions of South Africans on a variety of issues. And it allows different government departments to add modules, you know, in their pay for particular modules, so that they can be able to track, you know, progress in some of the work that they are actually doing. I would want to just finally say that, given the short time that we actually have, to say that we are making quite good progress in terms of our publications, in terms of our research output. We'll be reporting a lot of that in our annual report, which we'll be launching, you know, soon. And at that particular point, we'll be able to share with you what we've achieved over the last financial year. In this presentation, I'm simply trying to say what are the strategic issues that we at the HSRC are actually, you know, addressing. I just want to touch on the budget issues, bearing in mind the fact that this committee is supposed to be looking at our budget in line with the strategic plan that we're presenting. Our budget is about 336 million, and the parliamentary grant is 180 million, meaning that we have to raise the external income, and that external income that we're raising is about 140 million. We our staff costs are about 162 million, but if you look at the ratio between parliamentary grant and external grant, we get 54% from government and 46%, you know, externally, which is an improvement over what it is that we've had, you know, over time. When we started at the HSRC, it was very, very low. It was about 40% coming in from government, and the 60% was coming in externally. We still have a challenge in the sense that the funding itself is never enough. You know, you are looking at all of the different government departments, and we're saying, please don't forget research. Research is a critical area, especially social science research, because it affects everything that you know you want to achieve as a country, insofar as improving the socioeconomic conditions, you know, of the population. We need funds in order to, you know, for the CAPEX, to make sure that our buildings are maintained. For several years, we've not been able to get funding from Treasury, you know, to address our concerns with regard to the state of our physical building, and we're sitting literally on a time bomb insofar as that building is concerned. So we do need some money to be able to improve it. And then we also have some cash flow challenges, you know, at the time, because some of the money that we have to raise doesn't come as quickly as all that, especially the global economic crisis. It has actually affected our ability to be able to have sufficient cash flow sometimes to hold us, especially the last two months, you know, of the year. And I'd like to thank you very much.
Thank
Thank you very much, Dr. Shisana. I thought that you would include here, because this is a proper platform for your outcry in the world about the question of president of HSRC and CEO of HSRC. Here are the people who must present that argument. I thought you'd also, because you have just recently been appointed to that world forum. Are you the president or CEO? What is it there?
Okay. Previously, all science councils used to have in the legislation that governed the science councils ensured that every person leading it was the president of the organization. And then when the Parliament decided to change the legislation, they suddenly changed them to CEO, which actually disadvantages South Africa when it sits together with the colleagues around the world. When you sit with other colleagues, you find that they are all presidents of their science councils, and only South Africa comes in as CEOs. And I do think that it does tend to undermine the capacity of this country to actually demonstrate the fact that we're actually equal to our partners all around the world. So I would think that it would be wise for the portfolio committee to actually take up this issue to make sure that the heads of our statutory councils, all of them, actually are presidents so that they can compete, you know, with presidents of other countries. And just also to mention the question of the presidents of the International Social Science Council. This is a very important position that our country has been, you know, myself or the country, has been actually awarded the opportunity to lead, in the sense that we now are in a position of actually showing the world what needs to be done in so far as social science is concerned. In other words, we can develop an agenda globally for social sciences to say where should we be going, what are the priorities that the world should actually be looking at. The other important element is that we now have an opportunity of ensuring that Africa and South Africa contributes to global knowledge. You all know that global knowledge is usually generated in the north. So for the first time, you are going to have an invigorated effort to try to get the South, Africa, as well as South Africa itself, to contribute to that global knowledge. And that is absolutely critical. We are looking forward to the 2015 conference that will be, a World Social Science Forum that will be held here. And after that, there would be a report that is produced on the World Social Science Forum. And that report is going to carry a lot of information coming in directly from Africa, directly from South Africa in particular, and directly from the countries of the South. So it is important that we actually should contribute to this in terms of financially to make sure we've got enough money to be able to hold that particular conference. Thank you.
So you see, you nearly lost an opportunity to motivate your role and cause. I think therefore the DG must look into that and interact with us in Parliament, if at all, so that we can see. There are many things that we still need to streamline, including the legislation on the selection of boards. Because there should be some consistency. Some science councils are ruled by different legislation and others by other in terms of their boards. Can't be right. According to us in Parliament, all entities are supposed to be governed by common legislation, except where there are exceptional cases. But in particular, in one department, I do not see why there should be different legislation, because that is an immediate thing that there must be consistency in the selection of boards of a given department or entities of a given department. So that's a problem. We have actually partly discussed this thing even with the minister, and we are looking into that. But I think this is something that we need to speed up, because it creates a lot of unnecessary debates. I know that's also one of the points that she has raised before, Dr. Shisano, but we'll be looking into all those things. I just want to highlight some of those things because we've got all important architects here, you know, so it's good to utilize the opportunity, to seize the opportunity. Okay, thank you very much. I think I'll allow the members to interact with you now in terms of what you have presented. I'm sure there's a lot of interest that you have aroused, and I'll allow members to then make their contribution or inputs. Okay, I'll start from that side, from Honorable Nongoyane, and straight as consecutive up to Blanche.
Right. Chair, Honorable Members, DG and the team, thank you very much, Chair, for this opportunity. I think, first of all, let's congratulate the department through DG for this wonderful presentation. And secondly, also the support from our key allies that have supported the presentation. And thirdly, to Dr. Shisana. And of course our country for having been chosen again to host a world event. That our own is also leading that, and I think Chair, if I'm not taking over your responsibility, we can all wish him well from the study group that she will do us proud. Then the other thing, Chair, which is just a clarity point. These hearings, by nature, is a forum for the department and all those entities that are funded to account to us about the monies we appropriated for them in the last financial year, and also to give us an indication for the future in terms of budget. This is what we're going to do, this is what we're going to need. Yes, from the presentation, say that signal. That they convey. Key to this is that, as I think the department has already pointed out, that yes, in terms of spending, this budget didn't go over budget, which is very good. That's the point. But whether this, in terms of the oversight by the Auditor General, there's no disclaimer, there's no challenges around that. I didn't hear that. I know that in the book, it may be there, but at least in this forum, a voice to assure us that no, the money that we have appropriated and argued for them in the last financial year is the money well spent. And which will give us a comfort to argue this year for an increase, because really the money of the pillars of the is capable hands. Similarly, sir, is these two entities, the Council for Scientific and Industrial Research Council, which appointed the main with the department, which is quite correct, is a public entity that are funded through the department. Again, that's in the comfort if they could actually indicate to us. I know we are rushing because on May we're going to really have a budget debate on this issue. It would be good, this opportunity, if they give us, or if there's no ready material for them to furnish in writing, we would appreciate. I'm referring to these other two that are analyst in his knowledge system issues. Yes, very close to my heart and my constituency. Thank you very much for this. I can only say really that they're doing well. I hope that when we're engaging the basic education at the schools around these programs, they'll be able to really indicate to us that they're forging partnerships towards achieving excellence in this field. Sure. Just for now, Chair, let me just pause there. Thank you very much.
Honorable Chair?
Sorry about that. I just want to place on record that I think that this meeting and the time allocated to it is unfair to the department and to the entities that are reporting to us, because it's impossible for us for them to adequately present to us, which is obviously evident in what's just happened, and in the fact that we actually don't have enough time to thoroughly engage with them on issues that this has raised. And, you know, we have strategic plans that we can't properly interrogate. We have a budget from the DST, and they're financially stretched, that we can't actually interrogate because we don't have the time. And I think that this is grossly unfair to everybody involved. It would have been great, perhaps, if we'd started our parliamentary program, our committee program, earlier than we did to have, you know, fitted everybody in. But being as that may, I just would like the entities to know that we're not going to do any justice.
Sorry, on our issue. I think that complaint is wrongly placed, because that's a complaint we must lodge with the program parliamentary program office, because we are scheduled according to the programs of parliament, so it can't be a matter which should accuse any of us here, including yourself, because we are directed by parliamentary programs, and these are the time slots that we've utilized correctly according to the allocation. You have to, as the party, write to the program office and lay the complaint. Indeed, it is, because I think of the constraint of the election coming and all the things that have been worked, but it's not for us to answer that. It's a very wrongly informed platform, if at all we have to answer those questions.
Thank you, Chair. I take your point, but we did start our program late and we are entitled to it. But I'll park that as it may. I'd then just like to...
You see, the strat plans were only tabled to Parliament on 9 March. So totally it can't be a problem that can be leveled here. As I'm saying, your party is supposed, if at all, to direct those things to the program office or the parliament or the speaker of parliament, if at all. But it's wrongly located here. Thanks.
Right, there's a couple of questions.
Sorry, there's a member. Oh, okay, all right.
There's a couple of questions I'd like to ask the department, and particularly perhaps about the budget, the amount allocated. Somewhere along the line, I think that if we take the medium term, and I'm sorry you don't have the ability to answer the questions, you don't have the necessary documents, but over the medium term framework that was tabled last year, over 3 years, that's from 11, 12 and 13, the department was budgeted to spend 14 billion over those 3 years. And if we take this year's budget, and knowing that last year's budget was reduced by half a billion roughly, the amount of money available for spending in the years 11, 12, and 13 is down to 13.4 billion. So somewhere we've lost a lot of money. And I would like to know where that money has gone. Because I think we need every penny we can get. I also, in your strategic plan, you make no mention of the progress of the Science and Technology Laws Amendment Bill. We talk about the Indigenous Knowledge Bill, but there's nothing about the Science the Amendment Bill. I want to know what's happened to that piece. Also, in the latest budget, I was looking when I was comparing the amount of money made available to the various entities. I saw that NACI had disappeared. Maybe I was looking at the wrong table, but it was there in the previous report and it wasn't there in this one, and I wondered what on earth had happened to them. Right, then specifically on some other things, I see that the Antarctic program is being transitioned to the NRF. Can you please explain why that is? Also, the CHAIRS initiative. We're way behind on our targets for the CHAIRS initiative. And I see that only 72 of them are active, despite the number have already been allocated. What is the problem with the CHAIRS initiative? Why are we not actually meeting our targets on that? Also then, on the young researchers, I want to know, you mentioned earlier that we're not doing enough. What do we need to do to boost the number of youngsters studying, getting PhDs, whatever, in our research entities? Obviously, there's not enough money. How much money do you want? How much money do you need? Then I want to know what has happened to biotech. It seems to have sort of vanished as a strategic priority as such. And as mentioned, but we don't have any sort of update on how far that's going. I think that's basically where we'll leave it for now. Also, I want to just also express my deep concern at the strategic plan tabled by the HSRC. They've been given an extra 36 million rand this year, which I think is a fairly healthy increase. But I think that their strategic plan is inadequate for us to monitor their progress. To me, it looks like, and particularly the one page that they've given here on the financial projections, it looks like it could have been done on the back of a cigarette box if one could find such a thing in the HSRC's building. And I just think that there are no strategic, I mean, there's no information for us to actually monitor their progress. And I would think that we actually need to interrogate that more thoroughly, and perhaps we should schedule a session specifically with them at a later date. Thank you.
Thank you, Chairperson. Chairperson, mine is on page 8. It's about the students that you mentioned. Is that do you have a racial breakdown of those students, and do we have some from the rural areas? And then the next question is on page 13, under the human capital. The percentage that you said we might ask about, do you have a specific target of the percentage that you dream to reach? Yeah, and the other one is the job creation program that you have. Is it part-time or full-time? And that the presenter came in again during his presentation says, I think we want to do 1, 2, 3, I think. Now, what do you mean by I think? Will you do it, or if this thing does not block us, we think you will do that? Is there something that you think maybe will stay on your way during the implementation of your program? Yeah, thank you.
Thank you, Chair. First, congratulate Dr. Chisano on her appointment. I think we were proud and were confident that you will represent us as you always done. Secondly, my focus is only on page 16, which is your social and economic development outputs. Just briefly, the
you said there's a pilot which is located in the Western Cape. Are you intending broadening it, or are there other areas? I don't want to ask a question, why Western Cape? I just wanted to check if they are same applies. In fact, is the same clarity even on the rollout of the broadband connectivity? Fine, it's Limpopo, I would understand, it's more rural, but are there other provinces that you are thinking of rolling them out to? I think those will only be areas of interest for me in this. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you, Honourable Member. Is there any member who wish to make more input? Okay.
Thank you. This is to the DST. I noticed that the salaries bill over 2 years has increased by 27 million rand. Can you please break that down as to what these jobs are and why they're costing us so much more money? Thanks.
Joanna, to say something?
Thank you, Chair. Sorry. On page 18, on the risk environmental and disaster things. Do you have a what? I don't want to say capacity or ability. Are you able to monitor municipalities if they are really on understanding? I'm raising this because, and I hope, Chair, I'll be told if this question is not suitable for here. Particularly on environment, our localities in the municipalities, more on where the African people closer speaking, are so littered with the environment is polluted with whatever you can see or you can understand. My concern is, do they have, are you able to, is it your responsibility to monitor in ensuring that municipalities are really managing this? Because it's quite sad what we see and observe in our areas where we stay and where the majority of our people are staying. So it's more and the individuals. Do you have the data of these individuals? How do they communicate with you? The organized local groups. Because as I'm saying, in my province, not unless I've missed it, I've never heard anybody who has got such an enthusiasm about this area, which is quite challenging and sad. Thank you, Chair.
Honourable Chief Nkonya.
Thank you, Chair. Chair, I don't know whether it's a typographical error, so that on page 15 and 16. The last slide on page 15, we're talking about the International Meerkat Design Review completed already in July 2011. That's
also noted.
This was a public document. You may have to fine tune it properly. Then the next one, 16, page 16. Don't know whether I'm displaying my ignorance here. The last slide again, the last bullet point there, the Nkangala Disimuswan in Limpopo. I thought that it was in Pumala. So this is that type of thing, unless it has been redemarcated recently.
Okay, is it this new democracy, is it? Okay, right, I think they'll clarify on that, but I also have some short questions and comments to make here. There was a question of, I think it came from HSRC, the question of funding and so forth. We have recently here in Parliament passed a legislation that allows Parliament to participate in the development of money bills. And as a result, recently we had a workshop, Chairs and Whips here, on the establishment of PBO, they call it PBO, or Parliamentary Budget Office. Now, this Parliamentary Budget Office, part of what it's going to do, we will start participating in the processes of the development of budgets in Treasury to suit what Parliament thinks is supposed to be the proper funding for a given or given entity during the financial year of that funding. Now, the workshop's aim was actually to get input from chairs. There were models that have been collected around the world how these PB offices are working wherever they have been established. And then it was on the agreed, therefore, that we will be using all the models that have been studied. We will then establish our own model here, which is going to be used by Parliament in order to develop funding trends for our departments and their entities. So therefore, it will be important in future that any entity that has got some initiatives that need funding, they present it to Parliament, so that Parliament must be able, when these processes start in the Treasury, that they influence the Treasury to take into consideration those particular type of emergency funds that may be needed over and above the normal budget that are discussed at departmental level to present to the Treasury. So I just wanted to, I thought that it is very important to know that we are moving towards a direction now where we, Parliament, will directly be involved in the development of budgets for different entities in accordance with the reports that you present to Parliament, annual and start. That will be fundamental. So what you come and say at the beginning of the year, and what you come and say at the end of the year. For instance, it will be difficult for Parliament to go to Treasury and influence the increase in funding when you show that you do not have challenges, but what you are able to do it is to match what you have given to what you said you will do. So it means, therefore, Treasury will continue to fund you according to how. But it is only when you say we were unable to do some of the work because of the lack of funding that the that Parliament can be able to say that it means Treasury must increase some funding so that the Department is not constrained in doing what it wanted to do. So I'm trying to say that this is a very good graph showing that you use 98% of the funds and accept 2%. And then they say, well, that 2%, then it means next year we'll have to drop it by 2% so that you know, you lose all of them 100%. Because the best of it is not to, actually, the best of service delivery is when you have utilized all the funds than when you have not, you see. So it's very important, therefore, to understand this process. And as a result, we're going to be training members also to understand, to interrogate budgets, to interrogate strat plan in a very financially professional way. We have devised programs that are going to do that, so that we should help this process of developing the budget during the year according to the according to the rules that will govern the PPO here in Param. So these are some of the things that I think it's important to relate to you. The second thing that I wanted to talk about is from CSIR. I have noted the points of focus that you have raised, that you will be focusing on education, health, what did you say, energy, water, can you repeat that?
Thank you, Chair. We said the areas of focus are energy, health, built environment, natural environment, defense and security, and industry. And within industry, it's mining and advanced manufacturing.
Exactly, yeah. I think, you see, I just got worried because CSIR is one of our custodians of space technology. And we have the biggest conference coming to Africa this year, the International Astronautical Congress, coming for the first time in Africa since the 1940s. And we've got the Satellite Application Center, which is actually run by CSIR, which is about exactly what this whole Congress is about. Now, that you have not thought about focusing on that, in the year of climate change, where actually these two events are inseparable, because space technology and climate change are also inseparable. And I have not had anything focused on climate change thing in terms of being the custodian of research in South Africa, that you are also doing something to beef up the efforts of environment in terms of COP17, in terms of the International Astronautical Congress. I mean, that's a focus that it resides with CSIR than anything more. I would have expected that you say something about what the systems have you put in place to beef up these two important occasions that are coming to Africa for the first time. I'm a bit worried that you don't have anything in place. In terms of energy, that's a very good one, but you see, one of the things when we visited CSIR last time, you remember, we asked some questions there where we were showed us the atlas, the wind atlas, which was only located in the pockets within the land, and we were asking, why are we living such stormy oceans like the Atlantic here, where there's a lot of wind, where we could develop some good wind atlas for power generation, clean energy generation in the era of COP17. And we were told by some of those researchers that indeed it is true, but the problem is funding. And actually, there are a lot of funds that come from the British High Commission along that line that have been tabled at an annual basis for such projects to be developed. And I'm not sure when I don't see anything here as a follow-up to that. Probably we have to discuss it even outside there, because I think those funds are meant to exactly address such questions. I mean, Denmark has developed a wind farm in the sea there, which is not as stormy as ours yet, which contributes 17 megawatts of energy to Denmark, which is not very small, because Kupek with two reactors, they only contribute 7%. That wind farm contributes 17% megawatts. See? So I think we have to look into all those kinds of things. Yeah, I think that's it from my side.
Thank you, Chair. The advantage of doing the presentation is that you can field the questions to the real experts, but let's take them one by one. The question from Honorable Nkonyane about Okay, maybe we can come back when he's here. Yes. I will ask the CFO to correct me if I'm wrong, Honorable Sheen, on the 13.4 and 14 billion deficit. We had asked that because of the review of the design that was done on the SKA last year, so again, just an apology that we said 2011, the international community has looked at how best the telescopes or the dishes need to be designed in order for these dishes to get the maximum signals and get clarity on the pictures that you want. I'm sure you've seen the normal dishes have got the center of the receiver at the center, but the latest designs are funny in the sense that the receiver seems to be in an asymmetry position because that's where you'll get the maximum signal. That means that the time, we then had to be absolutely sure that the review of that design will inform how we roll out the Meerkat program. And that has implications in terms of how we are positioning ourselves to win the bid. Of course, that means that the rollout of the 64 dishes for the Meerkat would have to be delayed. So it's not a case that we don't want to build the dishes, but we wanted to make sure that we have a competitive demonstrator. So the time frame, therefore, for the rollout of the Meerkat has been, if you like, extended, which means that the time of completion and the expenditure was withheld in order to make sure that you don't just build dishes for the sake of saying you've built the dishes. So we then engaged with Treasury to ensure... But that's the
point. In future, Honorable Sheen, you must speak through the chair. Otherwise, if we'll allow anybody to just come like that, it will be chaotic. Just to play with it.
My understanding is that the 0.6 billion is exactly the rescheduling of the SK money. So that would be the short answer. It's about 530.
Through you, Chair, to assist the DG, it's 508 million, and it's being rescheduled, meaning to say that Treasury has suspended the budget for this financial year. However, it has been reallocated again in 2012,
2013. Honorable Sheen, please. It means that you do not recognize this office here. It's very clear the way you commit error one after the other. So I will be forced to report the matter to your party if you continue. And you know the trend. It's not very right. Thanks. For CFO. The CFO was speaking. She was disturbed. Can you continue?
Thank you, Chair. I was saying that the budget that was suspended by National Treasury is 508 million. And this money has been rescheduled for the 2012-2013, half of it, and then the other half will be in 2013-2014.
Thanks, Chair. The second question, again, you can correct me if I'm wrong, Acting DDG for Corporate Services. The S&T Laws Amendment Bill, I think we have got the certification from the state law advisor, so I think we are ready to move with that bill. The question was the status of the S&T. So I think it's been certified by the state law advisor, so we're ready to take it to Cabinet and eventually to Parliament. We look at this NACI that has disappeared. It might be an error, but NACI is still alive and there should be a budget for it. But say for you.
Through you again, Chair. NACI has not disappeared. We reorganized because NACI really didn't fit well in any of the programs. So, yes, it is in Program 1. Unfortunately, in Program 1, the way we set up the budget structure is according to Treasury. we do not have sub-programs in program one. We only have units. So it's within the unit. Therefore, there's no unit that is highlighted to say Nike, to say whatever unit it is. So it is there. It hasn't gone anywhere. Thank you.
Thanks. The question of the Antarctic program being moved to the NRF, I would, through you, Chair, try and make sure I understand the question correctly, in the sense that the Antarctic program had two legs. It had a leg at the NRF, and it had a leg in the Department of Environmental Affairs. The NRF was looking at the science part of the Antarctic program, and the Department of Environmental Affairs, former DIT, actually DIT, used to look at the logistic aspects. And we have now been negotiating through the recommendation of the previous review panel that both the logistics as well as the actual science program itself be incorporated under one umbrella. So I hope that that was the implication of the question. I'd ask Dr. Cabela to talk about the progress we are making around the rollout of the SACHI program and the things that we are doing under young researchers and emerging researchers that you asked. So maybe you can come back on that issue. The issue of biotech having vanished, we would like to request the committee to give us some time. We are finalizing the bioeconomy strategy. So firstly, in future, perhaps we'll talk less about biotech and talk more about bioeconomy, but it's one and the same thing. Well, not exactly. But we are looking at deriving socio-economic benefits from biotechnology, so we'd like to be looking at the bioeconomy. Of course, it means biotech is a contributor towards the economic growth that will be derived out of it. So we are finalizing this document, and like we've done with other grand challenges, I think previously when we finalize these documents, both the strategy as well as the implementation plan at a later stage, we would be happy to come back to the portfolio committee and share the details, but it hasn't finished. Maybe Olive can talk about the strategic plan and the inadequacy thereof. The salary is 27 million up. I'll ask maybe the CFO to talk about it, but what we have realized in the department is that one of the areas perhaps which we have not paid a lot of attention to, we've highlighted it in my presentation, is the area of monitoring, evaluation, strategy, and planning. It's an area where before we have been doing these things, but we have not perhaps done them the way that we would like to do. That's the first point. The second point, the creation of the Technology Innovation Agency as well as the Space Agency means that the department needs to have a stronger oversight role and capacity, and therefore we have to, at least in our view, expand the capacity that we need, both the capacity and the expertise that is required to fulfill these new functions, including the National Intellectual Property Management Office. So hence, I think, the motivation for higher budget within ourselves, but of course some of the budget goes to the entities. The number of students breakdown, again, I'll ask Dr. Covella to respond to that and the target that we want to reach. But these questions are all part of the human capital development strategy that I've said is under development, where we have specific targets that we want to reach, and we'll also be a bit careful. You can set targets that you cannot reach because we also need to look at the pipeline and the realistic sense of numbers that we can really fund and be able to talk to, but maybe can give an emerging picture from this human capital strategy that is under development. Job creation in terms of whether these are part-time job opportunities or jobs themselves, Mr. Patel will talk to the issue. My tentativeness of what I think is because some of these targets have not been firmed up and finalized, but I think in the case of human capital development strategy, we are clear now. In terms of some of the areas of socioeconomic development, we are clear what the targets are that we would like to do. We just need to be extra careful again, because when you set these targets, they are complicated, because there are two types of targets. There are targets that are within your control in terms of publications, patents, and technology demonstrator. But if you want these to make difference in the in the socio-economic development, there are things that are outside your control. And even just to give you an example, this idea of rollout of the programs that we have piloted at the DST, we need other partners. Other partners need to work with us and put funding in order to make sure that the socio-economic impact that we would like to do gets done. Same thing, we've done wonderful work with the CSR on nanotruck delivery. The uptake of that is not within the DSTs, and so, but we are clear with these targets and what we'd like to do. Again, I'll ask Imran to talk about the emerging thinking around the rollout of some of the pilot projects, Honorable Dundra, on the Western Cape and the broadband connectivity rollout. That's the first bite at the cherry is that we've chosen those areas because of some of the technicalities. In the Avalon program, I think the suitability of the West Coast in terms of abalone hatcheries was one consideration. But the program are not only about abalone in the aquaculture. There are a range of other programs on the East Coast. I think there's one in Nelson Mandela Bay, and then I think there's another one in the East Coast. But all of them are pilot. The question is, when can they be rolled out in other areas? And the answer is yes. But I suspect we would need partners and people who are ready to help us to roll this out. The tricky question which you're asking in terms of our role in monitoring environmental issues in the municipal level, the simple answer is no. But what we try to do is to provide the tools that could be utilized in enforcing or in terms of giving the information for decisions to be made. We do develop capacity in some of these activities. We're working with partners like the Development Bank, but again, the decision of the real implementation has got to be done by the municipality. Thanks, Chair, for the update on the role that Parliament will play in future. We will be, of course, as you know, we are supporting the minister, as you know, in a performance agreement that she signed with the president. One of the things she's been asked to do is to help cabinet to provide a strategy of how we would increase our investment of science and technology as a percentage of R&D. So we are working on this strategy. And this strategy will, of course, be informed by things that we would like to do, but it will also be informed by the capacity that we have and the capacity that we need to build in the future. So we will, of course, be working with you in this new role, of course, following other normal channels. And, of course, we are working with our public entities. In fact, we had Dr. Shisana miss the meeting, but I assume Deputy CEO informed him on the meeting we had with the CEOs, the Forum of CEO of Public Entities that report to the DST, where we shared the document that is under discussion around the strategy for increasing R&D investment as a percentage of GDP. So some of the issues that she has raised around additional funding are already contained in that, and we would like to take a single document once all the processes have been followed. Maybe at the right time, when the minister has seen the document and she's happy and there's a need to engage with yourselves, will be willing to come here. And then I'll leave the CSR to respond to some of the issues you've raised around energy, climate change. But I do like to help Tulani in his response if he comes in by saying that, by the way, Chair, the Satellite Application Center from the 1st of April this year is no longer part of the CSR.
Oh.
It has migrated into the Space Agency. So they will be the ones that will be providing...
But really, the Space Agency is part of DST.
Yes, but I'm just saying the CSR will no longer be in a position to speak on those issues.
Okay.
And I suppose, I think technically from the 1st of April. Yeah, 1st of April is never a date that you should take seriously, but nevertheless, I accept in government. So, but I think it has migrated.
Is that not part of that
April Fool? No. This one is serious. But just to respond to the issue you've raised, International Astronomical Congress. We will be participating, and we've bought some space in order to use this platform to showcase some of the work that we're doing for the SKA, because there will be an international community. So we will be participating there. But on issues of climate change and the work that the CSIR is doing, I assume again Dr. Dlamini is well placed in terms of the work that they are doing from the National Reserve, National Resource Nature, NRE, which used to be called Environment. So I think that's probably where I'd like to stop, but maybe let me go back to Honorable Nongonyane's question, because you had gone out. The stance from us, this is the year that has just ended on the 31st of March. We, I don't know if the CFO is aware of the interim audit, but we are of the opinion that we will continue to get a relatively clean audit. Now, remember, the audit has two parts. It's got the financial part. We should be okay as far as that's concerned. But the part that relates to performance information, we have now systems in place within the DST to ensure that we are able to monitor the we have systems to monitor performance in terms of the data collection, the reporting within the department. So that area, which was highlighted last year as an issue, we hope we should be in a better position to deal with that. So that was the first question around the funds that have been spent and clarity. The rural development, again, we will be coming again later in terms of an approach where we're looking at this in a way that takes a number of pilot projects that the department has been doing into an integrated rural program, which we are piloting in some of the areas. Again, maybe Imran can say a bit more around this. And there is, in fact, even work that we are doing with the Department of Basic Education. Maybe Dr. Covella can respond on this. We apologize for the mistake that you pointed out. You're correct. The review was done last year, not this year. And then I think, yes, Impangala is in Bumalanga. So I think that I think covers, again, if the entities, which was the second part of the AG's report, can maybe comment on their sense of the reports, but I do know we have not received. So maybe I'll give Dr. Covella, with your permission, Chair, some time to talk about, you know, HCD targets going forward and the racial breakdown, including the status of the Saatchi Research Chairs, why we don't seem to be moving. And then I'll ask Mr. Patel to talk about issues that relate to job creation and what they are exactly, including the rollout of the broadband going forward from the areas that have been identified, and maybe the entities to report to some of the questions that were raised specifically to them. Thanks.
Chair, excuse me. Chair and honorable members, thank you. I'll try and see if I can respond to the issues in a holistic sense, Chairperson, with your permission, rather than one-on-one. Part of the reason why we need to continue to invest in the chairs as an instrument for high-level human capital is because of the data that I presented earlier, the efficiency of delivery, and we do believe, obviously, the effectiveness as well, because if you look at the profile of the sort of work that they do, they're targeting many of the key priority areas of government. As a consequence of that, I do believe it would be fair for me to say, Chairperson and honourable members, that the Minister is likely to make some announcements going forward about continued investment in this area. But secondly, one of the things that we have been doing of late is reflecting on how we can create flexibility within the manner in which the instrument works, because it's not always easy to get an individual who may be wanting to relocate, let's for the sake of argument, Manitoba in Canada, to come and relocate to Mthatha and
we need to find flexibility to ensure that we still get his or her input, but in a manner that recognizes that they don't necessarily want to relocate their entire family to South Africa for a full 5 or 15 years. And so that's one issue that we're working quite well. Clearly, the investment continues in this regard. But secondly, Chairperson, one of the things that we have done over the last period is we have identified three key categories of investment in people. What we call the new generation, and new or young, I think as Honourable Member indicated, would be your postgraduate students at the level of honours, masters, doctoral, and postdoctoral study. So that would be the new, hopefully the future bright stars of the country. Second category is what we call the emerging researcher category. People who are already in the system, who are sometimes working, who have acquired, in some instances, junior degrees, but may require a master's, sometimes may require a doctoral, or sometimes haven't had an opportunity of doing postdoctoral research. And a large part of our system falls in that particular category. And the third one is what we call the established researcher category. People who are active, supervise. And here, the key instruments that we currently use are the chairs, the centers of excellence, the rated researchers, and so forth. And as a consequence, the young researcher category is where we really are trying to make a significant investment. The targets that we have been asked of, and I think the Director General put on the slide, that we're currently, this is 2008 data, around about 3%, 6% for masters, and about 12%, 14% for doctorates. We've set ourselves, I think, realistic but also ambitious targets for 2014, to get to about 5% by 2014 for honours, 10% for masters by 2014, and 18%, it's a stretch, that one, for doctorates. These have been codified in the Minister's Performance Agreement with the President, and we're working quite hard to make sure, and I think we are reasonably confident and silent so that we will meet those particular targets. We are able to provide the breakdown, the equity breakdown, both in terms of race and gender, at all those different categories. The issue of rurality, Chairperson, can be a challenge depending on how you look at it. You can look at rurality from where the individual comes from, in terms of where is their home, or you can look at rurality in terms of where they're studying.
Where
they are studying.
Oh.
So Rhodes University is rural. And so you could look at that and put it
in Grahamstown.
I don't remember, you probably agree. Vanderbilt Park may not be perceived as rural. So, but it doesn't mean that a young person from Iduchua doesn't go to Vanderbilt Park. So it's something that we would need to look carefully at. But what we have been doing, Chairperson, is doing a couple of things, is to look very carefully at how do we make sure that what we do enhances access to opportunity. And irrespective of whether you come from the rural part of the country or from the peri-urban or the urban, it's about access, among many things. Access, success, equity, and obviously excellence, given what we are looking at. And in this regard, because we are awarding bursaries, money is an instrument for access. And you'll recall last year, Chairperson, that the Minister had allocated additional money for those whose parents were, family income was less than 300,000 combined. So that's a way of providing access. Secondly, we are working with the Department of Higher Education and Training to see, hopefully by the end of the year, we'll be able to give you a sense of how many of our students that we support were historically supported by the National Student Financial Aid Scheme, so that you're able to track and ensure that there's a complementarity of government interventions. The issue of other forms of breakdown, Chairperson, we can provide in terms of what they're studying, you know, throughputs and all those things. Those are things that we can provide going forward. But as the Director General has indicated, this is one of the key areas that we are working on in this next period, and in particular looking at how we strengthen the young researcher category and the emerging researcher category, not to neglect the established because they're important for the system, but relatively speaking, the investment needs to be beefed up in the first two categories relative to the established category. Chair, thank you.
Almost I'm short of time now because we still have some local processes to finish off. So I would like the last speakers to really summarize their input.
I'll be very brief. The question around jobs, they both tax. There's short-term jobs, there's medium-term jobs, there's jobs that we hope will be more sustainable. So it's dependent on the project. The SKA construction jobs obviously are more part-time, EPW peeling, the village operators, the intention is to design them so that they sustainable in long-term and full-time. The agro-processing, similarly, they have different types. To say that government, because job creation is a priority, is developing a more clearer methodology around different types of job creation efforts, and the DST will align with that process, which will take pretty much this year. There's an information system being designed to look at jobs, and we are part of that process. The question around selection of areas and pilots and rollout, etc. Two questions. I think the DG mentioned that sometimes the selection of the pilot is dependent on, you know, for example, the abalone, you need to find particular economic zones. But pilots are also dependent on other things, a willing partner on the municipal side, location to the university that's supporting the initiative, etc. So a variety of factors are taken into account in the pilot. The important thing is not necessarily the pilot, because the pilot is intended to be demonstration. It's not a full-scale rollout. TST is not responsible for full-scale rollout of housing or whatever. And we've struggled with this a bit, but over time we're getting better at working more closely with our partner department from the very start, so that when they're successes, they are more easily taken into the way that government do business. So pilots are of different types. The service delivery pilots, the new housing design, we're working very closely with human settlement. Where it has an economic link, we are working a lot more closely now with departments like rural development, economic development, and the IDC, etc., to take forward some of that. And in fact, this week we had an engagement with business to look at how we can scale up and roll out some of our projects in a bigger way. So that's the answers around that. I think the environment things was covered. We provide the tools, and we provide more than tools. We also work very actively to build capacity. So in the case of the Atlas, we've targeted building capacity in 75% of municipalities to use the Atlas. It's not only the tool, but it's capacity building on the tool. I think that's
the CSR and then HSRC.
Thank you very much, Chair. I'll be very brief also on the issue of space. As the DG indicated, the infrastructure is moving to SANSA. However, the CSR will continue to be the user of the information that one obtains from this infrastructure. So it's a part and parcel of what we'll continue to do. What I didn't mention when I talked about our areas of focus is that these are underpinned by various technologies that we invest in. So space science is one of those, nanotechnology, for instance, but they are not an end by themselves, but a means to an end. So they continue to be part of what we will be utilizing within the organization. Climate change, of course, is a very important part of what we do. We are involved in various programs, some of them the DG has already mentioned, and will be quite visible. I can just assure you of that, Chair, in terms of COP7. We've got various programs that we are driving in this particular area, and maybe we can engage in more detail on that. The issue you mentioned around energy, are involved in terms of developing a wind atlas for South Africa, and we're working with partners from Denmark, in fact, and they're funding some of this work. Of course, the position that we've taken is that I think South Africa, the best renewable energy resource that we have in the country is actually solar. Wind is, of course, there, but it's not the best resource that we have. We put in, I think, more emphasis in terms of solar energy research, and we have programs in this particular area. Thank you.
I wouldn't agree with you in that, but it's fine. We'll argue outside here. Okay, carry on, Honorable.
Okay, thank you very much, Chairperson. And I'll be very, very brief. In terms of the Honorable Member Nonkonyana's question about the assessment of the performance of the HSRC insofar as financial management, I'd like to say that over the last 8 years, we've received unqualified audits continuously. We're just awaiting the 2011 assessment by the Auditor General, and I'm sure we'll report on that in due course. And then Honorable Member Shin's question about the strategic plan of the HSRC not being adequate because it doesn't have performance indicators. I wondered whether Honorable Member has seen page 23 of the strategic plan, which is clear in terms of the targets that are set for 2011 up to 2012-13 period. 2014 period. So it might be useful to look at that. And then finally, just want to say that with regard to the chair on the issue of funding, which the DG has reported, I just want to support the DG in terms of the fact that we do submit all of our budget requests through DST, and DST has been very helpful in submitting the information to Treasury. But Treasury has come back over and over saying that there's no money for CAPEX, in terms of infrastructure. So that is just a concern that we have, that despite the fact that DST has been very diligent in taking the information to Treasury, advocating for that, we still are not getting a response, from Treasury in terms of the question of infrastructure. And I think it's very critical, that we have a good infrastructure to be able to do our work. Thank you.
Okay, thank you very much. One thing that I didn't comment about, you remember there was a time, I think it's some 3 or 4 years ago, when we invited you to give an analysis of human settlements and other things, but one of them was human settlements, where you were describing how this process could be assisted, especially for those poor families to go into rural areas instead of the RDP housing and be able be given a chance to build their own houses in in free lands of ships and so, something like that. I think that was a very good analysis of human settlements being moved away from coming to squatter in the town centers, and causing a problem for government instead of being actually developed there wherever they are at very low cost. I think these are some of the issues that we need to revisit in terms of the problem and the problem that we face in trying to wipe out squatters in cities, because as you are, then our new ones come here. If we can develop the program to develop the rural and traditional areas, it would be better. I think one time we must engage on that. And especially because also CSIR has got some program on built environment and all those kinds of things, if they can be coordinated, maybe we can find a better solution. In any event, thank you very much. I think we've come to the end of this presentation. Thank you very much for all the contribution that all of you have made, the effort of coming down here. And I think we are almost getting ready for the budget vote, which, as usual, must take the type of success that we've always got before. We are trying, we've only got 2 weeks, so we're working on a very constrained time. We've got only this week and next week almost, so we've got a few days because the Good Friday is on Friday. And when we come back and from there we're going to work for elections, And when we come back from there, immediately is the budget vote. It's a very difficult situation. This whole thing was only presented to Parliament. There was draft plans on 9 March. You know, there's a process in them being presented to the Speaker, and the Speaker then introduces it to the committee and so forth. So the people who understand how Parliament works will be able to understand what are the constraints that we're faced with. Nevertheless, we have tried our best to squeeze everything. That is why, actually, under normal circumstances, entities should come separately and present their things. But this is not our choice. It is the circumstances of election and the circumstances of the just recently gone State of the Nation address and other processes. They make it totally impossible for us to do the deals the way we like, you know. We get constrained for time. But anyway, thank you very much for all the effort, therefore. I'll allow you to leave us in peace before you leave us in pieces.
I think DST has got a problem with geography. Roads can never be in rural universities. Thank you, Chair. Roads University can never. The action, we have to engage with that. Bye.
Thank you very much. So members should remain here so that we look at our program and the minutes quickly. Can I quickly?
Yeah.
No, no, no. Yeah, you want to make a copy?